Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host. As this episode is airing on St. Patrick's Day, I thought it would be fitting to discuss a subject related to some Irish history. So my guest today has been on the program three times before, and that guest is Jim Jackson. And he's the author of two books on local history here in Battle Creek, among them being Veterans of Oak Hills Cemetery and another one on the Haskell Home Tragedy. But he's also done a tremendous amount of research into the Irish military history, especially the Irish Brigade during the Civil War. So we're going to explore some of that history today and its connection to Southwest Michigan. So welcome back to the show, Jim. Thank you for taking time to be on the podcast.
Always a pleasure.
So, Jim, for those folks that perhaps missed the earlier interviews and don't remember who you are, could you take a minute and introduce yourself? How did you come into researching this Irish history?
I've done a lot of delving into the Civil War, different regiments, and I'm not from Battle Creek originally. I came here around 2006 from the Detroit area. So I'm learning. I was learning a lot of local history once I got here, and I was just amazed at the amount of. I mean, every place has just as much history as the next, technically.
Yep.
But Battle Creek in the area seems to have a whole lot of people and corporations that changed the world. So for the size of the town, it's phenomenal about all the great things that went on here.
It is. It is many layers of fascinating history. So do the Irish have an earlier military history in the U.S. prior to the American Civil War?
They do. In the American Revolution, of the five patriots that died in the Boston Massacre of 1770, one of them was an Irishman.
Oh, okay.
And there were nearly 1,500 officers of Irish descent and 26 generals in the Continental Army.
Oh, okay. So they had a big presence, at least in the Revolutionary War.
Right. And one of my notes said by 1776, a quarter of a million Irish came to the New World, mostly Protestant.
Wow.
And even the declaration of the 56 signatures, three of them were born in Ireland, and five others were of Irish descent.
Wow. That's quite a lot of people for that era.
It really is. And I came across one stat today that said currently there are 20% in the United States whose both parents were Irish.
Wow.
I find that one hard to believe, but it was on the internet, so who knows?
Yeah, the internet never lies, right?
No.
So I know a lot of folks who might be familiar with some of the Irish history, that the potato famine is one of those things that stands out. And prior to the Civil War, there was often called the Great Potato Famine that lasted between 1845 to 1852. And I know that the research that I did said that it was documented that at least 1.5 million Irish settlers immigrated to the U.S. during those years. So how many would you estimate found their way into Michigan?
I can't refute that. I came across that there was a large number came in 1840 to begin fishing off Mackinac Island in northern Lower Peninsula.
Okay.
And then from 1853 to 54, many of them were employed to dig the Sault Ste. Marie Canal. And others went off to dig canals in Grand Rapids and Saginaw.
There was a lot of that labor force that did digging with the Irish, because I remember a reference from Bernice Bryant Lowe's book about the Sands McCamley digging the canal in the 1837-ish range, that he hired a bunch of Irish diggers to do that work.
And that kind of makes sense, because I know Irish suffered from discrimination. I mean, I've seen newspaper articles from the early 1900s that, you know, Irish need not apply. So they were kind of relegated to menial jobs, and the women were pigeonholed into service jobs, maids and laundress.
Yeah, I know that there's they're depicted that way in some of the movies too, you know, those early period pieces that are showing the Irish immigrants, that they are treated as more of a lower class citizens, if that.
They were, and I think that's why a lot of them went into the military, because that was at least somewhat decent pay. At least it was equivalent to anyone else that was doing the same job. And I think that they were hoping that this would get rid of the stigma of no one wanted to associate with the Irish. It would give them a little bit of respectability, at least as much as the farmers that were shoulder to shoulder with them during the battles.
Well, can you give us an outline of some of the history of the Irish Brigade that you researched?
Yeah, early on, they were Irish in probably just about every regiment. So they were just scattered. However, there was there were groupings of regiments that were formed from ethnic groups, German and Irish and others. And the Irish Brigade that you will hear about, there's actually, there was an Irish Brigade earlier in Ireland, but typically, when you hear about the Irish Brigade here, they're talking about the Civil War Brigade. And that was composed of three New York infantries, one Massachusetts, and one Pennsylvania. Wow. The Pennsylvania and Massachusetts were mostly from Philadelphia and Boston, as you might expect. And the New York regiments were pretty much all New York City, because that's where they landed. You know, that's where they got to. And if they weren't aware of other family or friends, well, they wouldn't need to go much further than New York City.
And so they answered the call in 1861. I think that's the one Lincoln sent out that request for recruits and volunteers.
Yeah. And many of them, like I said, answered the call. I did come across more than once that some of the Irish wanted the military experience so that they could go back and work on their independence from England.
Oh, I see.
After this war was over, they would have the training to go back home and take on the British military.
Well, that's kind of interesting. Wow.
Well, I came across it several times, and that kind of makes sense. And that may have been underlining for some of them, and then they just decided to stay here and relocate permanently.
Right. So who were some of the key figures of the Irish Brigade?
Two of them that stand out. Well, one of them was Colonel Michael Corcoran of the 69th New York Militia. He enlisted as a private and rose to the rank of colonel by 1859, prior to the Civil War. His regiment was asked to lead off a parade in New York for the future King of England, which he very famously
refused.
Declined. and you know, received the receipt of your invitation, but I have no intention of going there, so don't bother sending any tickets. Well, he was court-martialed, and he was about to be severely punished when the Civil War broke out.
Oh.
So good timing for him, because they needed all the leaders that they could get. And he had been tested in Mexico. He was a very good military strategist. And he also recruited hundreds of Irish through the years.
Okay.
So he was a good guy to have, and all was forgiven for him. It's strange that anyone think that it was a good idea to have 750 armed Irishmen in marching in front of the future King of England.
Right.
But nevertheless.
Yeah, someone didn't think that one through very well.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But he was remembered and loved by his men for that. Mm-hmm. Years later, they gave him a regimental sword, mm-hmm. and on the hilt of the saber was engraved, recognizing April 10th of 1861, mm-hmm. which was, or whatever the date was, the date that he refused to participate in the parade.
Oh, interesting. Wow. So there was another, you said there was another perhaps important figure within the regiment, of the Irish regiment, that...
Yeah, the other one was Thomas, and I'll say his name is Mayer, mm-hmm. because I had to ask Alexis on that one. His name is spelled N-E-A-G-H-E-R.
Mm. Wow.
And I think I would have gone with...
Meager or something.
Meager.
Yeah.
Or something before. I figured I'd check it out to see mm-hmm. where the pronunciation was, and it was completely different.
Wow.
So, of course, Alexis gets her information from the internet. Mm-hmm. So, again, I've never heard his name pronounced in any sessions.
We will defer to the Irish audience out there to correct us if necessary.
That would be most welcome, and forward me any comments they have.
Okay, sounds good. I will do that. So, Mr. Thomas Mayer, I guess we're going to go with that pronunciation. What were some of his highlights of his involvement with the regiment?
Well, he was a prominent Irishman in the community, mm-hmm. and he was a young Ireland revolutionary before and escaped political prisoner over in Ireland. He became a newspaper man, orator, and Irish and American patriot. He really did adopt his new country and did much to rally otherwise reluctant Irishmen to the Union cause. Mm-hmm. There were Irish fighting on both sides, Union and Confederate. So, you know, I think for those that just wanted the adventure, mm-hmm. which a lot of young men on the farm wanted to go off and see the world that way, mm-hmm. It didn't matter which side they were fighting on, as long as they saw some action that they could have stories to bring back home.
Wow, that's interesting. I guess when I always think of Irish history in the U.S., I always think of them as being more of the northern part of the states up there. I didn't realize that there was several that had actually settled down in the southern states.
If I had to guess, I'm sure there were more in the northern sections, mm-hmm. because there were more menial jobs in the industrial part of the country.
That would make sense, yeah. So what were some of the battles that the Irish regiment was involved in the Civil War? What did they fight in?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Okay. I wrote down about half of them that you would probably recognize.
Okay.
A lot of them I didn't, but they fought at Antietam, Fredericksburg, Chancellorsville, Gettysburg, the Battle of the Wilderness, Spotsylvania Courthouse, Cold Harbor, Petersburg, and Appomattox Courthouse.
Wow. Were they at Bull Run, too?
I think they formed after Bull Run, but I'm certain that there were other Irish at Bull Run.
Okay. Wow, that's all the major, or most of the major campaigns that had happened during the Civil War.
It really was. Antietam was the bloodiest day in military history.
Wow.
That still is. Gettysburg was the largest battle, mm-hmm. but it took place over 3 days.
Right. Okay.
But at Gettysburg, there was a chaplain for one of the New York regiments, mm-hmm. and William Corby was a chaplain, priest for the 88th New York Infantry. Mm-hmm. And at Gettysburg, regiment was at the wheat field. If you're familiar with the individual battles, mm-hmm. at Gettysburg, it was really a terrible battle because the Union were in the middle of the wheat field and Confederates completely surrounded them.
Wow.
So, I mean, they didn't have much of a chance. Mm-hmm. And before the battle, Father Corby got on a huge boulder and gave everyone absolution before the battle started.
Right.
And I think a lot of non-Catholics were involved in that also, right, because they knew they were not all of them were going to survive the day.
Right. Yeah. So the Catholic faith was pretty strong within the Irish community.
Well, you were either Protestant or you were Catholic.
Okay.
Now, the Catholics were generally looked down by the other Irish, but... That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And Father Corby was, after the war, he became president of Notre Dame University. I think he was the third president of that university.
Wow.
And there's a statue of him giving absolution to the troops at Gettysburg. And there's an identical bronze statue outside Corby Hall at the university there. And, so that's kind of neat. I've seen both.
Wow. So the Irish Brigade had a big role at Gettysburg and Antietam. That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. And so is there a special monument dedicated to the Irish Brigade anywhere?
Well, there's the Dr. Corby, and there is a Celtic cross at Gettysburg.
Okay.
I would have to double check to see if it's specifically for the Irish Brigade or just all the Irish. Probably the Brigade, though, because they didn't tend to do monuments for ethnic groups, but for regiments.
Okay. Interesting. So there was probably not, you would think that maybe the ethnic group of Irish would have said, hey, we want to put a monument to honor our people that served in maybe Antietam or something like that.
I don't recall too many like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty much just putting monuments up for regiments, even the colored troops.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any for the blacks that served, but there are some monuments for the different, they were called USCT.
I see.
Michigan's first colored troops became the 102nd.
Mm-hmm.
USCT, when they became nationalized.
I gotcha.
They were no longer reporting to the state.
I see. So St. Patrick's Day is coming up this Sunday, and this is the day that this episode is going to air. So how was St. Patrick's Day celebrated in the Army during this period of time?
Well, there were several events,
mm-hmm.
and St. Patrick's Day, and this was specifically in 1861,
mm-hmm.
they had they built a reviewing stand, and they had Major General Joe Hooker, and there were about 30,000 soldiers there from all around, and they attended that social event. It was a social event of the season.
Wow.
They had jumping the ditch on horses. They had a mule race, they had a hurdle race,
mm-hmm.
and then they had the steeplechase. And that was the highlight of the day.
Wow.
So there were, it was an all-day affair, maybe lasted more than 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's kind of a celebration of the Irish holiday that we don't normally hear about. I imagine there was probably still drinking in festivities like that.
I'm guessing they got a hold of something, yes. I just noticed here, too, that there's also an Irish Brigade Union Soldiers Monument at Antietam.
Oh, there is. Okay.
National Cemetery. Normally, these monuments, you can search and find photographs of them.
I see.
The one at Gettysburg, I know, is a large Celtic cross
mm-hmm.
with the wolfhound at the base of the monument.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to make a trip out to Gettysburg at some time and see all of these monuments. I've been reading, anytime you read Civil War history, there's always somebody's path crosses with Gettysburg, and the history there must be tremendous.
You haven't been to Gettysburg?
I have not. I've driven by it in the past, but I've seen it on the highway driving through Pennsylvania, but I need to make a trip out there.
I've been there several times, and my impression was from what I learned in high school, mm-hmm. which I didn't pay much attention at the time. So I just assumed Gettysburg was like a large field with soldiers on both sides shooting at each other.
Right.
But Gettysburg, if you can think of any terrain, every terrain you can think of was at Gettysburg.
Wow.
There were fields. There were, I would call them mountains, but they're hills. Mm-hmm. And these soldiers ran up full speed with full packs on their back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to rest going up a paved path.
Wow.
So it's just phenomenal. And then huge, just rocky boulders like you'd see in a Lone Ranger episode.
Right.
I just, all kinds of different. And there was a major battle at just about every one of these geographical different locations.
So there, I also saw in some of the notes that you sent me, there was a Western Irish Brigade. Was that separate from the one that you referred to? Was like their separate division?
It was completely separate. A lot of Michigan soldiers or representatives went to join the Irish Brigade, but it had already left and it was filled.
I see.
So then they heard about one being formed in Chicago. So they jumped going west, and they were in many companies of Chicago, Illinois, or Illinois regiments.
I see.
And Detroit and Jackson and other areas. I mean, they just kind of came from Detroit through Jackson, and they were picking up Irish all the way along. So
they would have come through Battle Creek.
They were all Irish, but they were, yeah, they were all in this Jackson Guard, recruited by local people.
Following the railroad headed to Chicago, so they would have gone through Kalamazoo, Niles, and all of those places en route to Southwest Michigan here, you know. Probably went through Marshall and stopped there and recruited. And
now they were led by Colonel Mulligan at Lexington, Missouri.
Okay,
and they were in some lesser known battles, but they were in a few unique battles that are kind of known by most Civil War buffs.
Okay,
there was one battle of the called the Battle of the Hemp Bales.
Okay.
And what it was they were running up a hill to a fortified fort, which is not a good thing to do because you're watching your feet. You can't shoot people on the way. And some of these, they were hay bales all around. So they were wet, so they were heavy, but they managed to kind of roll them up in front of them to protect them from being shot at.
Okay.
And it worked well, except the farther they went, the heavier it got because of all the lead projectiles being embedded in the hay.
And you're going uphill, and it's...
And you're going uphill. So it was... they only got so far before they made their stand and figured this is good enough, and hopefully the bale didn't start rolling downhill.
Kind of reminds you of Sisyphus pushing that rock up the hill. In,
that's probably what it was. So the... It's kind of unique, and I've never seen anything other than a sketch, and there were a lot of sketches back then. Mm-hmm. There's sketches of all of those activities I mentioned about St. Patrick's Day festivities.
Right.
And there was certainly photography during the Civil War, but mostly aftermath of battles. We weren't.
No action shots. There's very few action shots.
Other than today, people weren't interested in taking pictures of everyday events.
Right.
Think back when you had to pay for film for each picture you took.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you see a lot of portraits of the soldiers in their uniforms or posing as groups. But you don't see any, very few action photos, if any, from the Civil War. You see aftermaths of battlefields. There were some shots of that taken, but not during it going on.
And bodies laying around, which, again, this was probably one of the first battles where it brought the war into their living rooms with their stereoscope, whatever. The 3D photos that they used to have.
It's like a kaleidoscope thing that they had. I forgot what they called it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a stereo something.
There was probably a big music legacy with the Irish as well, bringing a lot of their folk songs and music.
There was. I have a recording of one of their campfire songs. Mm-hmm. And Colonel Mulligan, I talked about, was killed in battle. They removed him from the battlefield, but he knew it was a
mortal wound. Yeah,
a mortal wound. So he instructed them to lay me down and save the flag.
Ah.
Well, I found sheet metal to the song "Lay Me Down and Save the Flag."
Wow.
Which is not, he wasn't the author of it because he was long gone, but someone after the war wrote that. So that sheet music is online.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. So what was your favorite story of the Irish that you came across when you were doing your research?
That's a tough one. I guess starting to, I found a lot of generals and things of Irish descent, but the only one the average person would have ever heard of would be Philip Sheridan.
Okay. Yeah.
It was totally Irish.
Mm.
I guess the absolution kind of strikes me because there are all these, a lot of these 17 to 21 year olds,
right.
It was a good chunk of the percentage of people there. And they're, whether they're Catholic or whatever, they're trying to make things right before they die.
Right.
And they're in perfectly good health, getting ready to go out to battle.
Wow.
I mean, that's got to be, that's not limited to the Irish Brigade. There's stories of a lot of other soldiers writing their name and address or town and sewing it into their uniform.
Right.
So that that'll be there when their body is found.
Yeah, the there was a lot of anxiety about that. I did a whole episode on that in my first season on this podcast. There was about the soldiers that there was no dog tags at that time. The creation of dog tags was something that came out after the Civil War when they saw they had so many unknown soldiers that became somebody's idea, and I forgot who actually came up with it, but they started the wars that followed. They started creating standard issue dog tags, and it evolved over the years. But there was certainly a lot of anxiety about being lost and forgotten, and your family never knowing what happened to you. And you know, there's whole cemeteries over in Virginia. There's like 40,000 unknown soldiers buried in one cemetery in Virginia when I did the research on it. That was they just didn't have any markings on the bodies. And so many of those families never found out what happened to their son, father, brother, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I've been to some that it's not just an unknown headstone. It's six unknowns buried here.
Right.
Or, you know, multiple bodies because they couldn't tell. Sometimes they could tell from insignia of at least what state they served with. They may not know which regiment, but they could say it's a Michigan soldier or a New York soldier.
Yeah, there's two Civil War unknown soldiers over at Oak Hill Cemetery, and I know that there are three more based on an interview that I found from Ogden Green, who was the sextant, and he buried them. And so they said they buried them with four soldiers. Three of them were unidentified. And so that was a separate, and at some point I'm going to do the research trail to find out roughly, they were put in the Potter's Field. So I need to locate where the Potter's Field is at Oak Hill for certain. Maybe we can do a monument to them or something.
There are several Potter's Field, but I think it may be in Section P,
okay,
which a lot of people called Potter's Field, but that was where the first GAR lot was put. And that's where all the Memorial Day parades ended up, from downtown marching to Oak Hill Cemetery, where they had more speeches.
Okay.
And they all went up by the cannon, which is, which was right by the entrance there. There's a flagpole without a flag. And right behind there, you'll find about a dozen or more Civil War headstones.
Yeah, okay.
Right by the fence, and the lettering is towards the fence. So you you kind of have to scooch down to read them.
Yeah, I've explored that area a little bit. I've seen a few of them. George Bailey, I think, is out that side of the in Section P. He's another Black Civil War soldier that is buried. Got a late headstone.
Right. Yeah, that was just put in about 10 years ago.
Right. So he was recently located. So it'd be interesting to do a project to put another memorial to the three unknown soldiers that are buried out there, too. And there are several in Southwest Michigan. I did a little research study and see how many unknown soldiers are buried across Southwest Michigan. And there's some in various cemeteries all the way from Van Buren County up to Kent County to there might have been some up in Barrie and Kalamazoo and places like that. So it's kind of an interesting testimony to what was going on during that time. It's unimaginable how many families just never found out what happened to their loved one, you know?
That's, yeah, and people don't think of that because it's like they don't know if he just decided to move on.
Right.
And, or whatever happened to them. They just never came home.
Right. A lot of that rise of spiritualism came after the Civil War for that reason, because they wanted to contact the dead, you know. So they, a lot of people got caught up in that new religion of spiritualism during that time, you know.
Yeah, that was big in this area too.
Right. Fascinating history. So any more information you'd like to tell before we wrap up today about the history of the Irish Brigade that we didn't cover?
Well, I did come across that of the 10 highest brigades, or most memorial, and it was based on a lot of different things. There was a book written, and it wasn't just the number of or percentage of casualties. It was the number of major battles they were in, the number of times they held their ground when it wasn't humanly possible to do it, but they did.
Wow.
There were a lot of criteria, and Irish Brigade was the third ranked highest on that.
Wow.
Second was the Iron Brigade, which Michigan was also part of.
Okay.
And the first one I never heard of, but it was a Vermont regiment.
Okay. Is the Iron Brigade, is that connected with the Upper Peninsula, with the iron up there?
No, no. It was given that name because the men stood like iron.
Stood like iron.
At Gettysburg.
Okay, wow.
According to the other side.
Wow.
And they wore black hats, which were very distinctive. So,
wow.
I mean, they kind of had a reputation. When they saw the black hats, they almost decided, let's not fight this battle today. But it was composed of four different states. Michigan was the last one to join, so they were well known before Michigan. In fact, Michigan got in just, Gettysburg was their first battle under fire.
Wow. Okay.
And they did well, according to the veterans. So, yeah, there's several books just on the Iron Brigade.
So the very, I'm not super familiar with the sequence of Civil War history, but the very first battle, was it Bull Run or is it?
Well, Bull Run is the first. There were some skirmishes before that. And of course, you might want to include the firing on Fort Sumter.
Fort Sumter, yeah, yeah.
No one was killed there, so maybe it wasn't considered a battle.
Yeah, it was the spark that brought everything on, yeah.
That was the start. And I think there were a few skirmishes here and there, but nothing significant. Not like Bull Run was the first test for both sides.
I see.
And Confederates took the day.
Right.
And pretty much every battle for the next 3 years. I mean, it's a wonder that Lincoln kept the Union together as long as he did. There was a lot of pressure to start having peace treaties and let's form two nations here because we're tired of losing our families.
Right. Very interesting study, and I see why so many people are fascinated with the history of the Civil War. And it's a lot of layers to that whole conflict that so many people were involved in, and so many battles, and so many changes of the tide, and the shift of the country. And the veterans that served in that war were quite proud to have preserved the nation with the Grand Army of the Republic and all of that history that they have there.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you back on today, Jim. So if they want to find out about your books, do you just recommend that they go to Amazon, or where do you have a special website?
They're on Amazon, but they're hard to find. Amazon, as you probably know, if you pay, you're going to be on the first page. If you don't, you won't be.
Okay.
And even if you look for my name in quotes, James N. Jackson, you're going to find books on Michael Jackson or Jackson, Mississippi before you'll find my books.
Right.
So,
the unfortunate of a common name.
Yeah, but I do have a website, and it's michlist.com.
Okay.
Michlist. And it's got a e-store there with all my publications, but it also has 4.8 million names that I gleaned from different books, county histories and first landowners and other things. And a lot of them are online. So you can do an A through Z index searching for your name, or the name you're looking for, and you'll see them in different, and many of these people, rarely did they spend their entire lives in one county.
Right.
They moved around. Even if they only lived in one place, they might go across somewhere else to buy something, and they'd be in someone's account book at a general store.
Wow.
So you can find all the sources and click on that. And if it's an older book, not in print, and copyright is expired, it's probably been scanned, and I'll link to that scan.
Okay.
Usually universities do that. There's a few private places that also do it.
Great. That's quite a resource, especially for people interested in local genealogy and just looking about local history. And I've referred to a few things on your website in the past, so I'll make sure I put the link in the show note descriptions for everybody. But thanks again for coming on today, Jim. It's always a pleasure having you.
It's always a pleasure doing this.
Okay. So. Well, I've been speaking with Jim Jackson. He is quite a historian of not only the Irish Brigade history, but a lot of other subjects. He's quite a genealogy instructor. In fact, I've learned a lot about genealogy from attending some of his workshops, and I highly recommend that you do next time he holds a workshop to attend something of that. And then check out some of his books that he's done the research on. They're quite fascinating, especially if you want to learn a lot about Oak Hill Cemetery. He did the editing revision of one of the major books on Oak Hill Cemetery, Beyond These Gates, and then he also wrote a separate book about veterans, specifically on Oak Hill Cemetery, which provides a tremendous amount of history. So if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I'm always happy to hear from my listeners. You can also reach out to me on Facebook at Michael Delaware Author, and follow me on Instagram at Michigan History Guy. And until next time, when we take another journey into yesterday and we explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past, have a happy St. Patrick's Day.